Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents White Flag of the Dead by Joseph Taluto. Narrated by Graham Halstead. 1.
Ugh. How's that?
Ugh.
Come on, caveman. Your son is calling you.
My wife of 6 years poked me in the ribs and pushed my feet off the bed. In the background, soft music played through the monitor, indicating that Jake, our son, was awake and had activated the toy. I'm too tired to play daddy today. Get someone else, I groaned, rolling over and burying my head in my pillows.
Move it, or we'll never play at making another one, she threatened.
Empty threat. I'm too good for any woman to give up cold turkey. Ellie grabbed my pillows.
Fine. How about it's your turn, since I got up at 2?
I rolled out of bed and lay on the floor. I'm nothing if not fair.
The words, have fun, floated over the bed and down to my ears as I started my morning routine of push-ups and sit-ups.
I barely felt them anymore, since I had been doing them since I was a kid. However, habits are habits, and it woke me up in the mornings. I walked down the dark hall, feeling very much like a zombie. I'm sure I looked it, too. But things needed to be done, and as the wife said, it was my turn. 5 a.m. was way too early for anything, let alone getting up from a very sound sleep. Jake, my 5-month-old, was wiggly and wanting to move out of his crib. He was just learning to sit on his own, although he couldn't push himself to a sitting position yet. He rolled all over creation and dragged himself along in an attempt to crawl. We thought he was the greatest thing, being new parents, but even we were surprised at how happy he was all the time. And what an easy baby he was, if judging by the grousing my brother did about his kids. Hey, buddy, I said, stepping over to his crib. Jacob had activated his plastic fishbowl, which had alerted us to his state of wakefulness. Jake looked at me and smiled through his binky, swinging his arms in excitement. How these little guys remained so cheerful all the time was a mystery to me. If I could bottle it, I would be rich. I picked him up and headed downstairs to make a bottle for him, since Ellie was not breastfeeding. She had tried, but it just seemed to not be in the cards. So here we were, spending lots of money on formula. I didn't blame Ellie. How could it be her fault? She felt bad enough as it was, since she believed she was not getting that special bonding time that so many people say is so important. On the plus side, it allowed both of us to have some special time with the little guy, so we enjoyed it for what it was. Downstairs, I made him a bottle and a small bowl of oatmeal cereal. The doctor had said he could start it, so we got some, and he really seemed to enjoy it. I tasted it once, and it reminded me strongly of glue, but I didn't let Jake know that. I turned on the television to see what news there could be. I generally watched Fox for news, simply because it was slightly harder to spot the bias. Ellie liked the local stuff, and once in a blue moon, I turned on CNN. Most of my news came from the internet, but it was good background noise. Incoming reports remain sketchy, but there seems to be some sort of outbreak in New York City on the Lower East Side. We go to Hannah Graves at the scene of Angel of Mercy Hospital. Hannah, what can you tell us? I glanced at the screen, but Jake decided to make a grab for the food bowl, so I lost the reporter's comments. Okay, thanks, Hannah. We're going to our interview with Dr. Rafiq Narwal from the Center for Disease Control. Dr. Narwal, what can you tell us? Are we looking at a pandemic? That got my attention. I picked Jake up to give him the rest of his bottle and stood in front of the television. Dr. Narwal looked bad, as if he hadn't gotten a lot of sleep lately.
Nothing of the sort. We have taken precautions, like we normally do when we have a situation where an infected person comes down with symptoms we haven't seen before in this country. In Africa, this sort of thing is routine and would not even be a story.
Something in his manner was not sitting right with me. I had spent the last 4 years of my life as an administrator in public schools, and I knew when someone was lying to me, or when they were trying to cover up something. Right now, Dr. Narwal was lying, and worse. You seem scared. When the CDC spokesman looked scared, check your antibiotic supply because things were not good.
I started to think about what I had read recently, where estimates of the death toll from a pandemic avian flu outbreak could reach 150 million. I started to pay very close attention. "What kind of symptoms, so we will know what to look for?" Darla, the commentator, asked. I called her Darla because I didn't know her name. She looked like one, anyway. Dr. Narwhal looked nervous. "The symptoms are relatively flu-like, with profuse vomiting, diarrhea, sweating, and salivating. If anyone comes down with these symptoms after being infected, it is a very good idea to isolate them, as they are very contagious." "Is this a new disease?" "All reports indicate we have not seen this strain of virus before, so yes." "Where did this begin?" Why people cared about this, I wasn't sure, but maybe it gave them some sort of relief blaming someone else. Dr. Narwhal explained. "One of our colleagues was doing research in a remote village in the Congo Basin. Nothing out of the ordinary there. Many of our diseases and cures come from largely unexplored regions like the Congo and the Amazon. Dr. Roberto Anillo was researching a new virus outbreak, and he discovered this new disease. We are currently running tests as to what kind of virus it is, what the incubation rate is, its survival rate in the open, what kills it, and what feeds it." I noticed he used only the past tense when talking about Dr. Anillo. "What can we tell people to do?" Darla asked, leaning forward, looking concerned for the camera. I felt her concern and appreciated the glimpse down her shirt. Dr. Narwhal relaxed a bit as this was familiar ground. "People should not panic. If a relative comes down with the symptoms, isolate them and call the authorities. If you feel you are sick, go to a hospital or clinic and they will take care of you." Something was ticking in the back of my mind, but I didn't pay close attention as I knelt down to change a dirty diaper. Jakey was finished with his bottle and gave me a satisfactory belch to complete his morning routine. I laid him on the floor and smiled at him, which got a full smile and arm flapping in response. "What you don't know about the world, buddy," I thought. In world news, England mobilizes its territorial army for a possible containment operation near Wales. Details are sketchy at this point, but there appears to be rumors of some sort of patient uprising in a local hospital. Further details as reports come in. "Okay, thanks, Hannah. In other news..." I turned off the news as my wife came down, yawning and stretching. "Anything on the news?" "Something about a new virus going around that seems to be hitting hard in a lot of places," I said, placing a few toys about for Jake to play with while I got my breakfast. "Really? Anything I need to know about?" Ellie stayed home with Jake 3 days a week after taking a year off from full-time work. We did the math and realized that she would be working just for daycare for Jake, so what was the point? She worked as a cardiac nurse for a hospital in the city, so she generally worked the shifts no one else wanted, Saturdays being one of them. "Just keep an eye out for flu-like symptoms and call the authorities if anyone has been infected. They didn't say anything about transmission, but that it was very contagious," I replied.
"Any reports of outbreaks around here?" Ellie asked, her eyebrows rising.
"Nothing on the local news, but I'm sure things will get out as needed, information-wise," I assured her. The internet eliminated information dissemination by the media. Everyone had a camera, video recorder, or some combination, which allowed them to post immediately exactly what was happening. YouTube was a great source of information, but it was better to watch with the sound off, as the posters tended to think they were trained cameramen.
"All right, we'll stay close to home, but I need to go to the grocery store. Jakey is running low on food. We're starting him on level 2 foods this week."
Ellie seemed pretty excited.
"He's getting to be such a big boy."
I grinned. "Takes after his daddy."
"Right. Nice fishing for compliments."
Ellie walked over to rescue Jake, who had managed to drag himself over to the vent and got his sleeper button stuck. I smiled and got myself breakfast, thinking about what I had heard on the radio. That old feeling was ticking in the back of my head, and for once, I decided not to ignore it. "Hey, babe," I said. Ellie looked up from Jake.
"What?"
"When you go shopping, could you pick up some extra bottled water? I kind of want to ease back on my pop intake." Ellie shrugged.
Sure, whatever. Anything else?
I thought for a minute. D and AA batteries. I think Jake's fishbowl is sounding weak, and his musical dragon is not so musical.
Okay.
I went back to my breakfast and thought about things before I went upstairs to get ready to go to work. I couldn't shake the feeling that there was going to be a lot more to this virus, and as I put on my shirt and tied my tie, I decided that prudence was the better side of caution. I reached into my closet and opened the small safe I had hidden behind my Chicago Bears jersey. I pulled out my Walther PPK and checked to make sure it was fully loaded and a round was chambered. I took it to the side of the bed where I had a thick book hollowed out to accept the little pistol. I placed the book on my nightstand and hoped that everything would be all right. 2. Driving to work at my usual pace, I barely listened to the radio, focusing more on the unusual amount of traffic that seemed to be on the road. The governor of my state was likely going to be indicted. He said he was innocent, the president was meeting with other world leaders about the new threat, and someone was having a sale on last year's model cars. Blah, blah, blah. I really didn't listen until I heard the word virus and Chicago. All of a sudden, I was interested, since I lived only 30 miles outside of the city proper. The talk show was discussing the new virus that seemed to be on everyone's mind. They said there have not been any cases yet reported in the Chicago area, but New York seemed to be having a difficult time containing it. A soundbite from the mayor of Chicago reassured everyone that precautions were being taken and antibiotics were being stocked up. I laughed at this. Antibiotics are useless against viruses, but it made the masses rest a little easier. I pulled into work, and the first thing I noticed was a general lack of activity. Usually there was a group of kids running around, but today it was quiet. I went to my office and spent what was essentially a normal day dealing with the normal problems of running a school. Kids showed up, we taught them, and they went home. It wasn't until later when I started to get that old familiar feeling again. Ellie called me on my cell.
Hey, you. Just wanted to touch base with you. I'm at Costco and wanted to know if you wanted anything special for dinner.
I could hear Jake squeaking in the background as he always does when he rides in a shopping cart. I thought for a minute. Just stock up on everything you think we need. Get a lot of canned goods and dry goods, stuff that we don't need to refrigerate. Extra toilet paper, batteries, everything. Don't worry about paying for it, just use the credit card. Ellie seemed baffled.
What's going on, John? What are you preparing for? I am not going to be acting like some lunatic Y2K fearmonger.
I knew I would lose a protracted argument, since I tended to lose them all. However, I also knew that Ellie was nothing if not practical. Just taking some precautions. If the virus spreads, people are going to panic, and then everything will be up for grabs. Why not get what we need now and not worry about it later? I stood by my office window as I spoke, and that allowed me a good view of the surrounding neighborhood. I watched an old man stumble a bit around his yard like he didn't know where he was. Alzheimer's, I thought. Too bad. Judging by the bandage on his arm, he had managed to injure himself. Ellie's voice cut off my observation.
All right, but don't complain to me if you get tired of soup and rice, she said.
Thanks, I said, looking out the window again. The old man's caretaker was coming out into the yard. I'll see you soon. Love you. The caretaker walked out into the yard, and I could see the old man turn his head and look at her. He reached out with one arm, and the other one hung limp. Stroke victim, I thought, feeling sorry for the old guy. Staggering steps were taken to the caretaker, who walked forward to give him a hand. When she reached him, his hand grasped her shoulder, and his head snapped forward to her neck. Jesus Christ, I yelled, watching as blood sprayed over both of them. My secretary poked her head around the door.
What's up?
Call 911 right now, I yelled at her, not being able to take my eyes off the scene across the street. A woman is being attacked on the other side of Hampshire Street. The man had dragged the woman down and was furiously chewing on her neck and face. She was struggling, screaming, trying to get him off, but I could see she was weakening from the loss of blood. The old man bent down and tore another chunk out of her neck, and the woman shuddered once and then was still.
I watched in horror as the old man tore at her stomach, ripping the clothes and skin open and tearing out hunks of flesh, barely chewing the meat, just forcing it down. I couldn't believe what I just saw. There was no way that just happened. I looked around to see if anyone else had seen or heard anything. I yelled at Janet, "Where the hell is 911? They said they're busy at the moment, but call back in 15 minutes. My mind reeled. I looked out again and saw the old man had gotten up from his kill, the front of his shirt completely covered in his victim's blood. He began his shuffling around again. I could not believe he was staying near the body. I watched as a neighbor came out and walked over to the fence. The old man made a moaning sound and lurched toward the neighbor. "Get out of there!" I silently screamed at the neighbor. The neighbor held out a hand to the old man over the fence, and when the old man got close enough, he grabbed the hand and promptly bit the arm it was attached to. The neighbor yanked his hand back and ran toward his house, screaming bloody murder all the way. "Jesus Christ!" I yelled again, not understanding what I had just witnessed. Janet again poked her head around the corner. "What now?" she asked. "The old man who just killed that woman was eating her, and the neighbor came out and the old man bit him too." "What? I'm serious. Right there, look." Janet came over to the window. She glanced out and nearly gagged. "Oh, God," she said, covering her mouth with her hand. The woman's body wasn't pretty. Her face and neck were covered in blood and bites, and there was a raw, open wound in her stomach. Entrails were hanging by her sides like blue-gray ropes. "What did 911 say?" I asked, turning her away from the window. "Exactly. What did they say?" Janet refocused. "And they said that they had received numerous calls and were dealing with them as quickly as they could. If it was not a life-threatening emergency, then we would have to wait." I looked at the scene across the street. I guess the waiting for help to arrive had just started. I decided I needed to get home and get with my family right now. I said as much to Janet and suggested that she leave right now as well. She didn't argue with me, having three children of her own waiting for her at home. As I packed up to leave, I looked out the window again. The old man was gone, and so was the woman. Blood was all over the grass, turning brown in the sun. I guess 911 came to the rescue after all. Hope the guy with the bite on his arm was okay. As I walked out into the parking lot, I was struck by how quiet everything was. I didn't hear any trains going by. I didn't hear any kids playing. Unusual for this neighborhood. I did hear an odd moaning, but I figured that was the wind. As I got to my car, I thought I heard several pops, like someone lighting off fireworks. It came from the east, where the hospital and clinic were, but I didn't think anything of it. As I drove home, I kept the radio off. I kept replaying what I had seen in my head, and nothing added up. What would make an old man attack someone like that? Alzheimer's did not turn people violent, and most certainly did not turn them into cannibals. I was so lost in thought, I barely felt my cell phone vibrating. It was Ellie. I snapped it open, not sure of what I was going to tell her. "Hey, you."
"Hey, John. I just wanted to touch base with you. I'm still at Costco right now and have picked up a lot of things. Is there anything else you think we need?"
"Off the top of my head, just extra batteries for the flashlights and the toys, some extra medicine stuff like aspirin and baby cold medicines for Jakey." My voice shook a little as I spoke to her.
"Are you sure? That seems like a lot."
Ellie seemed skeptical and reluctant to spend so much. "Trust me, I'd rather be on the safe side. Look at it this way, you won't have to go shopping for a while." I tried to be humorous, but I kept seeing that old man attacking that poor woman. Jesus, what the hell?
"All right," Ellie said. "I'll see you at home."
A thought occurred to me. "I may be home a little later. I want to make a couple of stops."
"Right. Pete's okay for dinner?"
"Sure."
"Bye now."
"Bye." I looked to see where I was, and I realized that I needed to get over quickly to catch the interstate. I had three stops to make, and would need to move fast to get home in time for dinner. As I merged on the interstate, I noticed there was a lot of traffic leaving the city, but that seemed normal. It was a Friday, and people generally left the city for relatives and other places. I caught the ramp to another highway and moved toward the street I needed. I briefly hoped that I would be able to get through the traffic quickly, but one never knew. My first stop was a little shop tucked away behind a gas station. It had two floors, and the first floor was devoted to fishing gear. Anything you needed for fishing, except boats, could be found there. I wasn't interested in fishing gear. I needed what was on the second floor. I went up and found the place to be slightly more crowded than usual. Racks of rifles and shotguns lined a display behind the counter, which held a wide variety of handguns. As I worked my way to the back of the store, I caught snippets of conversation.
Heard it spread to three cities now. What's this I hear about London and dead people?
What's the damn government gonna do? Set up another committee?
Can we waive the waiting period?
I stopped in front of the reloading supplies and looked around. Guns I didn't need, but ammo was another story. I grabbed two cans of powder, two boxes of primers, and a box of 1,180 GR HP 40 cal bullets. I worked the supplies over to the counter and waited for a salesman to notice me. An older gentleman came by and asked me if I found everything I was looking for.
Sure did. You guys are doing a good business these days.
His eyes glanced into mine briefly.
Never seen nothing like it. Something's got folks jittery.
Yeah, something, I said, lamely.
Follow your gut, I always say,
said the old man, grabbing a couple of bags for my purchase. I winced inwardly. What if your guts were being ripped out? Chase after the bastard who did the ripping? I signed the receipt and headed out to the car. As I was putting the supplies into the trunk, I noticed several more cars pull into the parking lot. Maybe we're all following our gut this time. I pulled back onto the interstate and headed south. I needed to make another stop before I headed home, and I wanted to make as much time as possible. So I ramped it up to 80 and rocketed down the highway. The main mess of traffic had left at the interstate junction, and the only people heading downstate or across the state were on the road. I finally decided to turn the radio on.
In world news today, there is a state of emergency in Africa. The Aneo virus has already claimed 3 million lives, and more are expected to drop as countries which up until now have been focused on military matters now turn their attention to this growing crisis. In Europe, Spain and Portugal have closed their borders, and England is no longer allowing any international flights to land. Thousands of French have fled the country to the north, hoping to cross the English Channel to perceived safety. French officials have denied reports that Paris is being overrun with infected persons, but several videos have surfaced on the internet. The grimmest scenes are filmed, posted on the internet, and viewers are cautioned, as they are highly graphic. In Asia, China and North Korea have officially closed their borders, and North Korea has issued a statement that any foreigners will be shot trying to cross into their country. President Trotman is expected to address the United States this evening. In business news, the stock market took a sharp turn as investors began a big late-afternoon sell-off. Gary?
I switched the radio off.
What the hell was going on?
Was the Aneo virus as bad as all that? I began to worry about Ellie. She worked at a hospital in the city and would have to go to work tomorrow. If viruses hit the U.S., she'd be right in the crosshairs. Lost in my reverie, I nearly missed the exit. A truck was pulled over to the side of the road, and it blocked my view of the sign nearly before it was too late. The driver was sitting behind the wheel, but as I flashed past, he raised a hand to the window. I waved back and zipped down the exit. At my next stop, I decided to buy ammo directly, and to hell with the cost. I grabbed up all the hunting ammo they had for the 30 carbine and the target stuff, too. I left two boxes on the shelf, figuring to be kind if anyone came after me looking for it. I noticed the shelves were empty of .223 ammo and 5.54x39 ammo. The clerk's eyes didn't even flicker when I brought the ammo to him. "Will that be all?" he asked, reaching for my credit card. I tried to make small talk. "Selling a lot of ammo these days," he smiled. "Quite a bit. Must be a competition or something coming up."
"Could be," I said. "Could you double bag that? I'd hate to have it spill all over the parking lot."
"Sure." I thanked him and took the ammo to my truck. As I backed out of my spot, I noticed an older employee come to the door with a sign that read, "Cash only for sales, please." I thanked God for my timely purchase and headed back to the road. One more stop and I would head home. I turned the radio back on.
Reports are coming in from Africa that infected people are reportedly falling into deep comas, then reviving and getting up. They are allegedly attacking anyone around them except for other victims. We have heard reports of horrific violence, and the entire continent seems to be on the verge of collapse. For exclusive videos and uploads, please visit our website for the latest information.
I turned the radio off as I sped down the back roads to the last gun shop I wanted to visit. I felt an almost overwhelming urge to get back home as quickly as possible. Every warning bell I had was clanging as loudly as possible that if I did not take this seriously, there would be no second chance. I stopped at the gun shop, which happened to be on my route home. It was more crowded than the others were, and several people were trying to buy more guns than they had money for. One guy who came in to sell his gun received 4 offers from other customers. I watched as 2 men nearly got into a fight over an AR that one wanted to see and others wanted to buy right then. Everything was selling, from .22 pistols to big 7mm Magnum rifles. Ammo was flying off the shelves, and I was relieved when I saw that no one had picked up the 30 carbine ammo yet. Pays to have an unusual caliber gun, I thought. I signaled the man behind the counter, who was waiting for a customer to make up his mind on shotguns. "Can I help you?" he asked. I noticed he was wearing a .45 on his hip. Prudent, I thought. "I need to get some 30 carbine ammo," I said. "Right. You want it by the box or case?" he asked, reaching behind him. I was surprised. "You have cases?" "Sure thing. Cheaper to buy a case than to sell it piecemeal, but we just got an order in yesterday, so if you want a whole case, I'll sell it to you discounted. Bigger discount if you pay cash." "Deal," I said, reaching for my checkbook. I kept emergency money there, and something told me this was definitely an emergency. "Let me go get it." He walked off to a back room that had a large padlock on it. As the door opened, I could see stacks of varied ammo and a wide range of calibers. Bet a lot of people would like to see that room, I thought. As I finally headed home, I thought about what I had seen and heard. I thought about what I had in the trunk and hoped to God that I was wrong. If I was, I was going to have a hell of a shooting day at the range the next time I got out. If not, well, I did what I could to protect my family. I just wish I had a clue as to what I was protecting against. If the virus was airborne, I could do little. If it was spread by contact, that was something else. A raindrop hit my windshield, and I looked at the darkening sky. Storm. Great. Maybe I'll get home before it hits. With any luck, it'll all blow over.
3. In related news, the Aneovirus has claimed millions of lives worldwide, and scattered reports of victims returning from the comatose state and attacking their caregivers are on the rise. In Africa, a veritable army of infected people is slowly marching their way across the continent, ravaging every village and city they come across. Their numbers seem to swell from each attack, and nations across the globe are scrambling to counter what many have called the worst crisis mankind has ever faced. Infected individuals seem to be impervious to pain, or even what some might consider debilitating injuries. New reports coming in from New York and Chicago and Los Angeles indicate a heavy population of infected individuals. Official reports are debunking the somewhat popular notion that the dead have come back to life. YouTube videos abound on the internet, and officials warn self-styled zombie hunters that they will be prosecuted within the fullest extent of the law. Anyone caught looting will also be prosecuted. Individuals are urged to stay in their homes and avoid all contact with infected individuals. They are to be considered extremely dangerous. If a loved one or family member exhibits any symptoms of the virus, they are to be isolated immediately, and the family is to place a white cloth on their mailboxes to alert emergency personnel to the presence of another victim. I switched off the television and looked out my front window. I could see 3 houses with white towels on their mailboxes, and I wondered how many more will there be.
will there come a time when all the houses have white flags on them? If your house doesn't have a white flag, will the officials think you're a...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?